This is Audible.
Random House Audio presents Star Wars, Vision of the Future by Timothy Zahn. Read for you by Mark Thompson. Chapter 16. From behind him came the sound of an opening door, and Han turned his head to see Lando step into the Lady Lux bridge.
"Okay, it's done,"
the other announced, his tone tense and decidedly grumpy.
"Everything's been shut down to standby. Engine, sensors, computer system, the works."
He crossed the bridge and dropped into the pilot's seat beside Han.
"And I'd like to go on record right now as saying I hate this."
"I'm not exactly happy about it myself,"
Han had to admit.
"But this is the way it has to be."
Lando snorted.
"Says a self-admitted Imperial clone TIE pilot,"
he added accusingly.
"You know, Han, I've done some crazy things in my time, but this one takes the prize."
Han grimaced, gazing out at the stars. It was crazy, all right. Somewhere out there, a hyperspace micro-jump away, was an Imperial Ubiquitrate contact station, with all the security and firepower and just plain nastiness that implied. And here they were, probably well within its defensive perimeter, sitting around like a belly-up gaunt, with their systems cranked way back to keep from being too visible to any auto-rovers the station might have out wandering the area. Waiting for an Imperial clone to come back and tell them where in the shrunken Empire the capital of Bastion was located.
"Leia said he was all right,"
he told Lando.
"She said he was sincere and not planning to betray you,"
Lando corrected darkly.
"She didn't say he was a competent enough liar to pull this whole thing off. Especially not in front of some congenitally suspicious Ubiquitrate agent."
Han eyed him.
"You don't like clones, do you?"
Lando snorted again.
"No, I don't," he said flatly. "Palpatine may have talked about alien species as being subhuman, but clones are really down there."
For a minute, the bridge was silent. Han gazed out at the stars some more, rubbing his fingertips over his blaster grip and trying not to let Lando's nervousness get to him. Leia had agreed to let him come out here, after all. And Leia was a Jedi. Surely she'd have seen or felt or guessed if something bad was going to happen. Wouldn't she?
"Tell me about this Baron Fel," Lando said suddenly. "I mean the original one. What was he like?"
Han shrugged.
"Typical Corellian, I suppose. Well, no, actually he wasn't. He was a farm boy, for one thing, who got bribed with an academy appointment to stop him testifying in a legal action against some big agro-combine official's son. We were at Corita together for a while, though I didn't hang around him much. He was an honorable sort, I suppose, even a little stiff-necked about it sometimes, and a pretty fair pilot."
"As good as you?"
Lando asked. Han smiled tightly.
"Better,"
he said, a little surprised he was actually admitting that out loud.
"At least with something the size of a TIE fighter."
"So how did he wind up getting cloned?" Lando asked. "As I remember the history, he quit the Empire, joined Rogue Squadron, then got recaptured. So the question is, why would anyone clone a guy who had already turned once? I don't care how good a pilot he was."
"Leia and I asked Carib the same question on Pakrik Minor," Han said. "He told us he didn't know, that it wasn't part of the flash learning they'd been given in the cloning tanks."
Lando grunted.
"Look, they would have had to hold him there for 3 or 4 years, minimum, before Thrawn got his cloning tanks up and running, right?"
"They didn't need all of them,"
Han murmured.
"Sabaoth cloned Luke from the hand he lost at Bespin, remember?"
"Yes, but Luke's hand was one of Palpatine's trophies," Lando pointed out. "Why would anyone bother keeping parts of Fel in storage?" No one even knew Palpatine had all those cloning tanks hidden away, let alone that Thrawn would show up and get them running again.
Point,
Han conceded.
So they probably kept him alive somewhere.
Right, Lando said. The question is, where?
I don't know,
Han said.
No one ever found records about him at any of the Imperial prisons or penal colonies we liberated. With his connections to Rogue Squadron, we would have heard if they had.
He hesitated.
The other thing you might not know is that a month or two after his recapture, his wife pulled the same sort of vanishing act.
Lando frowned.
I remember Wedge talking about that once. But you say vanishing. I thought it was the Empire who snatched her.
That's what everyone thought at the time, Han agreed. But once they started sifting through the evidence, it was a lot less clear what had happened. Anyway, no one ever found a trace of her either.
Lando shook his head.
If any of this is supposed to reassure me, it's not. The only way Izzard could have gotten fell back on the Empire's side would have been to brain twist him. You want to tell me what kind of clone is going to come from that?
Han sighed.
I don't know. All I know is that Leia cleared him.
Lando nodded.
Yeah, sure.
Again, silence descended on the bridge. This time it was Han who broke it.
What are Lobot and Mogit doing back there?
He asked.
They were practicing their slicing techniques before you had me shut the computer down,
Lando said, still sounding grumpy.
They're probably checking over Mogit's equipment now.
Did you tell them where we were going?
Lando's lips compressed briefly.
I told them we were going into the Empire. I didn't tell them exactly where or why.
Maybe you'd better go do that,
Han suggested.
Mogit may need to brush up on Imperial computer systems or something.
I don't think Verpine ever have to brush up on anything,
Lando said. But he nevertheless levered himself out of his seat.
Sure, why not? We might as well be all worried together. It's better than sitting around waiting for the hammer to drop anyway.
Don't worry,
Han called after him as he left the bridge.
It'll work out. Trust me.
There was no response but the metallic thud of the door as it slid shut behind him. Sighing again, Han turned his attention back to watching for Carib's freighter to return, trying hard not to worry. The ubiquitrate agent seated at his console gazed up at his visitor from under bushy eyebrows.
All right,
he said in a voice that somehow reminded Carib of 1,000 pressure worms scratching their wings against tall grain leaves.
Your ID checks out.
Glad to hear it, Carib said, trying to put some righteous indignation into his tone. To his ears, though, he sounded merely plaintive.
Does that mean you're finally ready to listen?
The agent leaned back in his seat, regarding Carib coolly.
Sure,
he said.
Provided you're ready to hear a list of charges against you, if this big news of yours isn't as flacking urgent as you seem to think it is.
He slammed his stylus down on the desk in front of him.
Blasted divist! You know you're never supposed to come here yourself! All you people are supposed to know that! Everything you have to report goes through channels! Everything!
Carib remaining standing at attention, listening to the reprimand with half an ear, and waiting with all the patience he could muster for the other to run out of words. The self-generated tirade, he knew, was one of the ubiquitrate's classic tactics for rattling someone they wanted to be vulnerable. But no, that wasn't something he knew. It was something Baron Suntir Fell had known. Something that had been artificially transferred, along with his piloting skill, to Carib and his brothers. Memories that were not his own, from a person who was not him. And yet, on some level, was indeed him. It was a mind-numbing thought, a painful and depressing blurring of identity that had cost Carib many a sleepless night back on Pakrik Minor, before he'd finally made the conscious decision to bury it as far back at the edge of his mind as he could. and he'd done a fair job of keeping it there, until the long-awaited, long-feared orders had come in from the remnants of the Empire. Could it really have been only 2 weeks ago? Reactivating his TIE combat unit. Then, all the old uncertainties and questions and self-doubts had surged back to the front of his mind. He was a clone. A clone. A clone.
Stop it! He snarled at the word. I am Carib Devist, husband of Lacey, father of Dabarin and Kina, tall grain farmer of the Dorchess Valley of Pakrik Marna. Where I came from and how I came to be don't matter. I am who I am.
He took a careful breath, and as he did so, the doubts once again returned to their uneasy sleep in the deep crevices of his mind. He was Carib Devist, and despite what anyone might say or believe, he was indeed a unique individual. The Ubiquitrate agent was starting to wind down now, and with a flicker of private amusement, Carib realized that for once the old intimidation tactic had backfired. Far from unnerving its intended victim, the tirade had instead given him the time he needed to collect his thoughts and his nerve and to prepare for verbal combat.
So, let's hear it, the agent snarled. Let's hear this vitally important news of yours.
Yes, sir, Carib said. There was an Imperial attack on New Republic High Councilor Leia Organa Solo over Pakrik Minor 5 days ago. It failed.
Yes, thank you. We know that, the agent said sarcastically. Are you telling me you broke security?
The reason it failed, Carib continued, was because...
I'm talking here, Devist,
the agent snapped.
You broke security for a story we could have pulled off Coruscant hourly?
Was because, Carib went on doggedly, they were assisted.
Will you shut up? I'll have your skin pickled in.
By an unknown alien ship, Carib finished.
A hot slimy...
He broke off.
What do you mean, an unknown alien ship?
He demanded.
I mean, a ship with a completely unknown design, Carib said. It had 4 outboard panels, like the 2 on a TIE fighter, but the rest was definitely non-imperial.
For a long moment, the agent measured Carib with his eyes.
I don't suppose you happen to pull any records of the battle,
he said at last, his tone challenging.
Not of the battle itself,
Carib said, pulling a data card from his side pouch.
But we did get something off the ship afterward.
The agent held out his hand. Carib dropped the data card into it, mentally crossing his fingers. Solo had cobbled this thing together during the trip here from a pair of records he and Organa Solo had had with them in their ship. Where they'd gotten the originals, Carib didn't know. And really didn't care, either. Combat, intrigue, galactic security. None of those were matters he and his brothers wanted anything to do with anymore. All they wanted was to be left alone, to raise their families and tend their farms and live their lives. And all he cared about at this immediate moment was that Solo's gimmicked record be good enough to fool this glowering bit-pusher into believing it. If it was... The agent whistled under his breath, peering at his reader.
Tarkin's teeth,
he muttered, shaking his head.
Are these energy readings correct?
That's what was there.
Carib hesitated, but he couldn't resist.
So was it worth breaking security for?
The agent looked up, but it was clear he wasn't really seeing Carib anymore.
I'd say so, yes,
he said absently, keying his board furiously.
Sure. Just watch it when you head home, and keep with the zigzag. Dismissed.
And that was it. No thank yous, no well dones, no nothing. Just a petty little Ubiquitrate agent on dead-end duty at the edge of nowhere, with visions of promotion dancing through his head. But that was okay, Carib knew as he headed down the corridor. His part was done now. Or almost done. And Solo would take it from here. He could go back to Lacey and his brothers and sink back into the quiet anonymity that was all any of them desired. Unless... He grimaced as a thought belatedly struck him. Yes, the ubiquitous agent back there had swallowed the bait in a single eager gulp. But that was no guarantee the military analysts on Bastion, who would take the record apart, would do the same. And it was no guarantee at all that Grand Admiral Thrawn wouldn't see instantly through the scam. If he did, and if Solo was still in Imperial space at the time... He shook his head once to clear it. No, he'd done what they'd wanted, and had risked his own neck to do it. What happened now was in their hands, not his. His part was done. Period. Quickening his pace, he headed toward the docking tunnel where his freighter was berthed. The faster he got out of here and back to his farm, the better. From off to the side, the speaker suddenly crackled.
Solo?
Hastily, Han dropped his feet off the edge of the control board, where they'd been propped, and keyed the comm.
Yeah, I'm here, Carib, he said. You got it?
Yes,
Carib said.
He sent the droid probe off on Vector 43x15.
Behind Han, the bridge door opened.
Is that Devist?
Lando asked.
Yeah,
Han said, as he punched up a chart.
You sure this is the Vector to Bastion?
It's the direction the probe went. I'm sending you a copy of the recording.
What I meant was, are you sure he was sending it to Bastion?
Han said, as a beep from the board acknowledged receipt of the transmission.
He didn't say anything one way or the other, but from the shining vision of promotion in his eyes, I can't see where else he would have sent it.
How about to the main ubiquitous base at Yagga Minor?
Lando countered.
Isn't that his proper chain of command?
Usually, yes. But matters of immediate military importance go directly to High Command. Your unknown alien ship should come under that heading.
We hope, Lando muttered.
Besides which, there are military politics involved. Anyone stuck out on a contact station like this is here because the upper echelons have basically written them off. The only way to get out is to impress someone higher up in the military. Again, that means sending it straight to Bastion.
Han lifted his eyebrows at Lando.
Sounds reasonable to me.
I suppose,
Lando said suspiciously, peering with narrowed eyes at the freighters hanging in space outside the Lady Luck's viewport.
So Baron Fell was pretty good with military politics, was he?
Han winced. Whatever Lando's feelings about clones might be, there was no reason to go out of his way to antagonize Carib, especially when the man was trying to help them. Even more especially when they were sitting at the edge of Imperial space within spitting distance of a ubiquitous station.
Carib,
it's all right, Solo,
Carib said, his voice studiously neutral.
Maybe you'll agree now I was right when I talked about this back on Pakrik Minor.
Han winced again. Carib's contention that there was still heavy prejudice against clones in the New Republic.
Yeah, sorry.
It's all right. My part's done. I'm heading home.
Good luck to you. The freighter curved away from the Lady Luck and flickered with pseudo-motion as it made the jump to light speed.
He's sure in a hurry to get away,
Lando growled.
He's heading home,
Han reminded him, turning his attention back to the chart. A course of 43x15 from the ubiquitous station would put it...
Looks like the Saturnanian system,
Lando said, looking over his shoulder.
Yeah, it does,
Han agreed, nodding.
Funny place to put an Imperial capital, Lando said, an edge of suspicion still coloring his tone.
Oh, I don't know,
Han said, skimming down the data the Lady Luck's computer had on the place.
It was a sector capital once, so they're probably used to having a bureaucracy underfoot.
Still a long way from the glittering towers of Coruscant, though,
Lando said.
Isn't everything?
Han countered.
Come on, We're wasting time.
Shaking his head, Lando dropped into the pilot's seat.
Sure. Let's just walk into the middle of the Imperial capital. Why not?
Lando, look.
No, it's all right, Han.
Lando said with a tired sigh.
I said I'd do it, and I will. I just wish I didn't have to.
He reached over and keyed the nav computer.
But wishes don't bring you the cards you want. Give Lobot and Moget a call, will you? And tell them to strap in.
Sure,
Han said, reaching for his own restraints with one hand and going for the comm switcher with the other.
Hey, don't worry. It's gonna work out fine.
Yeah, Lando said. Sure.
No!
Ishori Senator Jik Toksono snarled, slamming a horny-tipped fist down on the table for emphasis.
It is completely out of the question! The Ishori will not accept anything less than full and complete justice for the Kaamasi and the people of the New Republic!
Justice is what we all seek,
Diamalan Senator Parolo Mayatami countered, his voice the glacial calm of his species.
But...
You lie!
Duxono all but screamed, his ears flattened against his head.
The Diamala demand the impossible and refuse to settle for anything else.
Senators, please!
President Ponk Gavrisum cut in, his wings sweeping briefly between the other two as if trying to separate a pair of enraged shockball players.
I'm not asking for a resolution of the Karma situation here and now. All I'm asking...
I know what you are asking,
Duxono snarled.
But justice postponed is too often justice ignored.
He jabbed a finger accusingly toward Mayatamia.
And that is precisely the situation the Diamala are trying to engineer.
The Diamala have every intention of seeing justice served,
Mayatamia said coldly.
But we understand that more urgent matters should take priority.
Thrawn is dead,
Duxono snarled, leaping to his feet as if to physically attack the other.
He is dead! All Imperial records agree!
Mayatamia remained unmoved.
I saw him, Senator. I saw him and heard him.
Lies!
Duxono cut him off.
All lies created to distract us from the search for justice!
Seated in the small room behind the false wall, Booster Tarek shook his head.
Idiots!
He muttered.
Both of them.
Now, father.
His daughter, Mirax Tarek Horn, said, squeezing his arm.
Both of them are probably sincere, from their own different points of view.
And we all know what road is lined with sincere people,
Tarek said sourly, glancing back over his shoulder.
Where is that blasted Bell Iblis anyway? I've got work to do.
You've got nothing but overhaul and maintenance work on the Errant Venture scheduled for the next 3 weeks,
Mirax admonished him firmly.
And you're not needed for a single bit of it.
Booster sent a glare at her, a glare that worked about as well as such looks had ever worked on her, which was to say not very.
I thought daughters were supposed to be a source of pride and comfort to their fathers in their old age,
he grumbled. She smiled.
When you get there, I'll see what I can do, she promised.
The smile faded as she turned back to the false wall.
This whole thing is starting to get out of hand. Have you heard that 100 systems have already petitioned to rejoin the Empire?
My sources say it's only been 20 systems,
Booster said.
Everything else is just rumors.
Whatever the numbers, it's still something to worry about, Mirax said, a note of quiet dread in her voice. If Thrawn is really still alive, and if all this turmoil persuades people they want or need his protection, and the Empire could regain its territory without firing a single shot.
I doubt they're going to talk that many systems into coming back,
Booster argued.
But he didn't feel nearly as confident as he was trying to sound.
Anyway, there's not a lot we can do about it.
Behind him, the door slid open.
Ah, Captain Tarek,
General Bell Iblis said, striding in and offering his hand.
Thank you for coming. I trust you've been well entertained. If you mean the dance show, I've seen better,
Booster said, jerking a thumb toward the loud drama in the next room as he reluctantly and briefly gripped Bell Iblis's hand. He and Authority had never gotten along very well.
Speaking of dance shows, I've got a bone to pick with you over that nonsense in the Sifkrik system 3 weeks ago. The bureaucrats there still haven't released the Hoopster's prank back to me.
I didn't know that,
Bell Iblis said, shutting off the speaker that was bringing the argument in from the next room and pulling over the room's remaining chair.
I'll give orders to have it sprung as soon as we finish here.
Booster eyed him warily.
The word finish implies a start.
Indeed it does,
Bell Iblis agreed, positioning the chair to face the two of them and sitting down.
I didn't ask you here just for a private showing of Gaversum's mediation skill. Incidentally, I presume I don't have to tell you that anything you heard here is to be considered confidential.
Really?
Booster frowned thoughtfully at his daughter.
Let's see. The Aishori scream when they debate and want a square meter of skin off every Bothan to give to what's left of the Karmasi. The Diamala want the same square meter, but only from the Bothans who helped destroy Karmas, exhuming them, if necessary, as soon as anyone figures out who they were. Who do you think we should sell these big secrets to first, Mirax?
She gave her father a patient look and shifted her attention to Bell Iblis.
We understand, General, she said. What is it you want?
I'll let you see a bit of this private conversation because I thought it would help drive home the seriousness of the situation we're in,
Bell Iblis said, nodding back toward the discussion still going on now inaudibly behind them.
The build-up of warships over Bothawi is being repeated all over the New Republic as worlds and species line up behind the Aishori and Diamala over this issue. The only way we're going to defuse the situation is to find out who exactly the Bothans were who sabotaged the Kamas planetary shields.
As a dancer, General, you know better than they are,
Booster said. Get to the point.
Bell Iblis locked eyes with him.
I want to borrow the Errant Venture.
Booster stared at him, too stunned even to laugh in the General's face.
You must be joking,
he got out at last.
Certainly not!
What do you need it for?
Mirax asked. Bell Iblis shifted his gaze to her.
We think there may be a complete copy of the Kamas document in the Ubiquitrate base at Yaga Minor,
he told her.
Gaversum has decided to launch an information raid to try to get hold of it.
A data raid on a Ubiquitrate base?
Booster echoed.
What poor sucker pulled that assignment?
Bell Iblis regarded him coolly.
I did,
he said. For a moment, the room was silent. Booster studied Bell Iblis's face, wishing the general had glazed over the false wall behind him when he'd turned off the sound. The argument back there, particularly the Aishori senator's wide-armed flailing, was highly distracting, as Bell Iblis probably intended it to be.
Okay,
he said at last.
I get the picture. You need a Star Destroyer to sneak in through their outer defenses. Last I heard, the New Republic still had some captured ones. Why not use one of those?
Two reasons, Bell Iblis said. First, they're all too well known. Disguising their markings and engine ID signatures would take too long.
And probably not fool anyone for long,
Mirax murmured. Booster glared at her.
Whose side was she on here, anyway?
Right,
Beliblis nodded.
Second, more importantly, we can't pull any of them away from their assigned patrol duties without everyone in the sector instantly missing them. You know what an information raid is like. If the target gets even a whiff of your plans, you're sunk.
Booster crossed his arms across his chest.
Sorry, General. I sympathize with your problem and all, but no deal. I went through too much for that ship to risk it in some crazy scheme that's none of my business anyway.
Beliblis cocked his head slightly to the side.
You sure about it being none of your business?
Booster uncrossed his arms far enough to tap at his upper chest.
You see a New Republic military insignia here?
You see the Daimalan senator back there?
Beliblis countered.
They're allies with the Mon Cals on this Bothan situation. And you know how much the Mon Cals hate smugglers. If all-out war breaks out, one of the first things they're likely to do is move against all smuggling groups they can find. And if for no other reason than to drain the potential pool of privateers the other side can use.
He lifted an eyebrow.
And with an Imperial Star Destroyer in your possession, where do you think you'll end up on their list of things to do?
Booster grimaced.
Somewhere near the top.
That's where I'd put you,
Beliblis agreed.
So helping me is very much in your own best interests.
He had a case, Booster had to admit, and he could feel the accusation behind Mirax's eyes as she gazed at him, reminding him of his glib comment not 5 minutes ago about how there was nothing they could do. And it occurred to him, as it might not yet have to his daughter, that if Beliblis was going to Yaga Minor, Mirax's husband, Corin, and the rest of Rogue Squadron would probably be going in with him. But to be asked to risk his beloved errant venture this way was just too much. Yes, it was falling apart, with half its systems questionable or totally dead, and with an operating cost that would make an Imperial Baron blanch. But it was his. All his. He paused. What in the worlds was he thinking of? He uncrossed his arms and resettled himself in his seat, eyeing Beliblis speculatively.
Unfortunately, even if I said yes, you'd never get away with it,
he pointed out.
You turn a halfway decent sensor array on the errant venture, and a blind Wampa could tell we're not up to Imperial standards anymore. We'd need turbo laser and tractor emplacement upgrades, shield rebuilds, whole system replacements. You name it, we need it.
Beliblis's gaze had hardened noticeably during the recitation.
I see,
he said dryly.
Aaron Kraken warned me about you.
Glad to hear he remembers me,
Booster shrugged.
It's up to you, General. I'll lend you the ship, but in exchange you have to upgrade the systems. And win or lose, those upgrades stay put when it's all over.
The Mon Cals will love that.
If war breaks out, the Mon Cals will be the least of my worries,
Booster said bluntly.
Every two-bit pirate and smuggling group in the galaxy will be trying to get their hands on the venture. That's my offer. Take it or leave it.
I'll take it,
Beliblis said, standing up.
Where's the ship now?
Parked over in the Outer Mist system,
Booster told him, standing up as well and trying not to show his surprise. His admittedly spotty experience with New Republic officials was that they needed more cajoling and a lot more bargaining before they finally gave in. And New Republic military officials were even worse.
Where do you want it delivered?
I'll tell you once we're aboard,
Beliblis said. Booster frowned.
You're coming with us?
Along with 200 of my crewers,
the general said.
We'll assist you in flying the ship until we pick up a proper crew at the rendezvous point.
I have a proper crew,
Booster retorted. He should have known Beliblis wouldn't give in this easily.
For running a mobile smuggler's depot, perhaps,
Beliblis said.
Not for impersonating an Imperial warship. I'll be bringing a full skeleton complement aboard before we leave the rendezvous point.
Booster drew himself up to his full height.
Let's get one thing straight right now, General,
he said stiffly.
The Errant Venture is my ship. If I don't captain her, she doesn't go anywhere.
Once again, Beliblis surprised him.
Certainly,
he said calmly.
I wouldn't have it any other way. I have a shuttle waiting. We'll leave at once.
Whatever you say,
Booster said, fighting against the bad feeling that, despite appearances, Beliblis had still not given in quite the way it sounded.
Mirax, you might as well take my shuttle and head back home.
Beliblis cleared his throat.
What?
Booster demanded suspiciously.
I'm afraid Mirax will have to come with us,
Beliblis said apologetically.
It's absolutely vital that we have complete security on this, and that means no one who knows about it can be allowed to wander around loose.
Booster drew himself up again.
If you think I'm going to let my daughter come on a raid against a ubiquitous base...
Oh, no, not at all,
Beliblis hastened to assure him.
She and her son will stay behind at the rendezvous point with the prep crew.
Once again, Booster had the distinct feeling of having had the blocks knocked out from under him.
Fine,
he muttered.
Well, let's get going. If you're determined to go marching into an Imperial base, you might as well get to it.
Yes, Beliblis said. Let me thank you once again for your help. Don't worry, it'll all work out fine.
Yeah,
Booster grumbled as he took Mirax's arm.
Sure.
Chapter 17. With one final truncated lightsaber sweep, the last of the chunks came away from the opening and crashed hollowly to the rocky floor.
There,
Luke said, peering into the hole.
What do you think?
Mara stepped close to his side and shined her glow rod into the opening.
Still going to be tight for the droid,
she said.
But I think it'll do.
Luke glanced back over his shoulder to the 8 Quam Ja hanging from the passageway ceiling.
Yes, it would do.
More importantly, now that Splitter of Stones and Keeper of Promises had returned with the Quam Ja hunters, Eater of Fire Creepers had promised, they should get moving before they lost any prestige in their guide's eyes. Or to put it another way, before they lost so much confidence in Master Walker of Sky that they decided to back out of this trip entirely. They hadn't said much about Builder with Vines' violent death, but they were definitely avoiding the area where their friend had died. And they weren't going out of their way to be nice to Child of Winds, either. If he and Mara didn't get moving, there was likely to be more of the same trouble they'd already had too much of.
I agree, he said,
returning his lightsaber to his belt and stepping over to the shrunken collection of items that had been his pack before the fire creepers had gotten to it. Aside from the food bars in their metal case, the spare blaster power packs and glow rods, and some of the synth rope, there wasn't much left. The bedrolls, survival tent, med packs, even the detonator casings on the grenades had all been ravaged into useless shreds.
I guess we just take whatever we can salvage of this stuff.
That's what I'm doing,
Mara said. She had one of her ration boxes open and was sorting out the bars between the various pockets in her jumpsuit.
Soldier's first rule, concentrate on the food.
Understood,
Luke said, starting to fill his own pockets. R2 rolled unsteadily up to him on the uneven ground, and with a beep of invitation, slid open the hidden compartment in his dome.
I'm putting what's left of the synth rope in R2,
Luke called to Mara, stuffing the coil into the compartment.
In case you need it.
Fine,
Mara said.
I'm ready.
Me too,
Luke said, gazing into the darkness.
You want to stay with the same marching order?
You mean with you in front and me behind handling the luggage?
Mara asked, nodding toward R2. Luke felt his face warming.
I
know what you meant,
Mara said, giving him a wry smile.
But you're the Jedi, and if there's anything in there with big teeth, you've got the best chance of toasting it before it draws blood. So, after you.
Luke looked up at the waiting Quam Ja.
Sure,
he said, shifting his glow rod to his left hand and drawing his lightsaber.
We're ready, Splitter of Stones.
Follow me,
the Quam Ja said, dropping off the ceiling and fluttering into the darkness. It was quickly evident that their route wasn't so much a passageway as it was a narrow, V-shaped crack in the rock. Within the first three steps, Luke was forced to return his lightsaber to his belt and wedge his glow rod into his tunic to free up his hands to help pull himself along. Behind him, he could hear R2's continuous nervous twittering and the occasional muted thunk where Mara bumped him into one of the sidewalls. Each time that happened, he had to fight back the impulse to offer his help. If Mara needed him, she would ask. Probably. Fortunately, the crack was only no more than 3 meters long, with a yellowish wall blocking the far end.
This is the way inside,
Splitter of Stone said from a perch at a small gap that broached the yellow wall near the top.
Beyond this wall is the High Tower.
I'd say we're here,
Mara commented.
That wall's definitely artificial.
Agreed,
Luke said, wedging himself into a more or less steady position in front of the wall and drawing his lightsaber.
You and R2 keep back.
The wall was quite thin, and, more importantly, not made of ketosis oil. 3 quick slices of the green blade, and they had their entrance. Luke dropped through the opening, lightsaber and Jedi senses at the ready. Beyond the wall was a dark, high-ceilinged room, incredibly dusty, that extended out beyond the range of his glow rod beam. Spaced along the walls at 2 different heights were elaborately tooled wall sconces that looked like they had once held torches or torch-like lights. Above the sconces, at perhaps a dozen other points around the room, other gaps showed where sections of the yellow wall had crumbled away from the ceiling. Aside from the sconces, there were no other decorations or furnishings.
Doesn't look like Hijarna,
Mara muttered from behind him, having her own glow rod around.
What?
Luke asked.
There's a ruined fortress on the planet Hijarna,
she explained.
Card sometimes uses it as a meeting place.
Yes, he said something about that when I saw him on Sejansij,
Luke said.
He said if this fortress was like that one, it could probably shrug off any attack he could throw at it.
Him or the New Republic in general,
Mara said grimly.
The Hijarna fortress was made out of some incredibly hard black stone that could eat mass turbo laser fire for breakfast.
She gestured with her glow rod.
My first look at the High Tower from outside the cave mouth reminded me of that one. But the wall material here isn't anything like it.
R2 whistled, his sensor unit extended and rotating back and forth, as if searching for something.
That doesn't necessarily mean anything,
Luke pointed out, squatting down in front of the droid and peering at the data pad they'd rigged up to serve as translator for his more complicated comments.
They could have been built by 2 different groups of the same people.
Maybe. What's he saying?
He says that from the fastenings, he doesn't think the wall sconces were part of the original furnishings,
Luke said.
For whatever that's worth.
He straightened up and pointed toward the unseen part of the room.
He also says there's a very strong power source operating somewhere over there.
Really?
Mara said with interest, taking a step in that direction and shining her glow rod into the darkness.
Let's go take a look.
No!
Keeper of Promises said sharply from above Luke.
Hang on,
Luke said to Mara, looking up. Keeper of Promises was perched on one of the wall sconces, his wings quivering with agitation.
What's wrong? He asked.
That way lies destruction,
the Kwamja said.
Others have searched that direction. None have ever returned.
He says there's danger that way,
Luke translated for Mara.
Specifics unknown. Except that it eats Kwamja, I presume,
Mara said.
On the other hand, the only way out of here has to be that direction.
No, there is another way.
Splitter of Stone said from one of the other sconces.
Come.
He flew across the wall to their left and settled to a perch in one of the other gaps beneath the ceiling.
Here is the entrance to the hidden passage.
Really?
Luke said, feeling his eyes narrow. The Kwamja hadn't said anything about a hidden passage before.
And this hidden passage leads into the High Tower?
Come,
Splitter of Stone said.
You will see.
Hidden passage, huh?
Mara commented as they crossed the room, R2 rolling along behind them.
I don't recall that being mentioned before.
Me neither, Luke said.
It could have been just an oversight. Or an awkward but conveniently forgotten fact,
Mara said darkly. R2 twittered questioningly.
Awkward because hidden passages usually also have hidden exits,
Mara said to the droid over her shoulder.
And unless the Kwamja have found a way through those exits, they won't know any more about the layout of the High Tower than we do.
How about it, Splitter of Stones?
Luke asked.
Have you and your people been inside, or haven't you?
We have traveled all through the hidden passage,
was the somewhat sullen reply.
There are places where we can see the threateners and hear what they are saying.
Let me guess,
Mara said.
They've never actually been in the High Tower, but they're sure they'll be able to find their way around once we get them in.
Basically, Luke said heavily. Apparently, for all their talk, no one's actually been inside the place.
Some of the Quam Quay have been inside.
Child of Wind spoke up.
I know of some who have done so.
Luke frowned at him.
They have? Who? When?
Friends from other nestings have entered from above.
Child of Winds explained.
But they have always been quickly driven out and have seen very little.
Still, that's apparently more than the Kwamja have done,
Luke said, looking at Splitter of Stones again. The Kwamja was maintaining a stiff silence, but Luke could tell he was not at all pleased with this revelation.
Have you yourself been inside, Child of Winds?
No,
he said.
Only friends from the nesting nearest here.
What's the debate?
Mara asked.
Child of Wind says some of the younger Kwam Kwei of the region have poked around inside the upper areas of the High Tower,
Luke said.
But how is it that you're in contact with these others, Child of Winds? I thought Hunter of Winds said matters outside your nesting were of no concern to you.
They are of no concern to adult Kwam Kwei,
Child of Winds said.
But all children may fly freely wherever they wish.
So adult Kwam Kwei were territorial, but their children mixed together across nesting boundaries however they wanted. And in the process played the role of informal ambassadors and information gatherers?
possibly. Something to remember if and when the New Republic decided to make official contact with them. Beside him, Mara cleared her throat.
Ahem! Is any of this, no doubt, fascinating conversation helping us get inside the High Tower?
Not really, Luke agreed, pushing the glimpse into Kwame Kwe's social structure aside for now. Stepping to the yellow wall beneath where Splitter of Stones was sitting, he ran an exploring hand across the surface. If there was a hidden door there, it was very well hidden.
You think we should look for a release, or open it the easy way?
Mara's answer was the snap hiss of her lightsaber.
Get out of the way, she said. You too, Kwame Kwe!
Splitter of Stones fluttered hastily to one of the wall sconces. Three quick slashes, and Mara had a man-sized opening cut in the wall. Lightsaber held ready, she jumped into the gap and ducked to her right. Luke was right behind her, ducking to the left. They were in a narrow passageway, no more than a meter and a half across, which, like the room behind them, extended to the right beyond the range of their glow rods. In the other direction, the passageway ended in a wall only a few meters away. And leading up over their heads from that end was a set of stairs.
Over here, Mara,
Luke called quietly over his shoulder as he headed that direction. The stairs were narrow, and like the passageway itself, extended past the range of his glow rod beam. Overhead to the left, he could see just the hint of an angled and rising ceiling. Another flight of steps, he decided, probably connecting with this set at some unseen landing ahead. Rising vertically along the inside edge of the stairway were a series of thick cylinders that ran from below the level of the passageway up into the darkness above.
That's our way up, all right,
Mara said from his side.
Uh-oh.
What? Luke asked, frowning as he stretched out with the Force. There was no danger he could detect.
The stairs,
Mara said, her glow rod shining downward on the lowest steps.
Now that looks like Hajarna building material.
Luke frowned down at it.
Any way to tell for sure? A couple of blaster bolts ought to do it, she said. But the noise would probably travel farther than we'd like. Anyway, at the moment, it's irrelevant. We're not launching a full-scale assault on the place.
Right. We're trying to sneak in, Luke agreed. Looks like we'll have to go single file.
I think we're all used to that by now,
Mara said, playing her glow rod up and down the steps.
Reminds me of that secret passageway Palpatine had in the Imperial Palace.
Reminds me of the service shaft in Illic on New Cove, Luke said, remembering that long walk he and Han had taken up those stairs to a landing area crawling with Imperials.
You'd think just one of these secret stair builders would have the courtesy to install a turbo lift,
Mara said, shaking her head.
Or at least a droid carrier.
It would be nice, Luke agreed. Well, nothing for it but to start climbing. Let's go.
With the narrow but relatively open area ahead and above them, Luke decided to let Splitter of Stones and his cadre of Kwame Kwe take the point, flying up and ahead of them. Luke went next, carrying the droid for a change, leaving Mara and Child of Winds to bring up the rear. Mara had groused a little about that, arguing that she wasn't tired and could handle the droid just fine. But Luke had declared the staircase safe enough for him to take droid duty and had ignored her complaints. Not that she'd complained too hard or too long. The droid had been getting heavier and heavier lately, and she was just as glad to be rid of the burden for a while.
Any idea what these are?
She asked Luke, running her fingertips across the first of the thick vertical cylinders as she passed it. From this position on the stairs, she could now see to the first landing, and a quick count showed there were 20 of the cylinders rising through the gap.
They don't look like ventilation shafts.
The droid warbled.
R2 says they're power lines, Luke told her. Probably bringing energy to the High Tower from the big power source he picked up.
That's one blazing lot of capacity,
Mara said, eyeing the cylinders uneasily. Are all 20 of them pulling power?
The droid twittered again.
Only 3 are active at the moment, Luke said. But the others are still functioning. Running to weapons or shield generators, maybe?
I was just wondering that myself.
Mara felt her lip twitch.
From near the mouth of the cave, you can see 3 towers rising from the fortress. 3 intact and 1 broken.
Yes, I remember that from the record the Starry Ice brought back,
Luke said, his voice and emotions tight.
You suggested that the shot that took out that tower might have also gouged out some of the ravine you flew in through. Is Hajarna stone that tough?
I don't know,
Mara said grimly.
But Hajarna stone plus 17 power lines worth of shield generators might do the trick.
Luke whistled softly, shaking his head.
You know, this place is starting to look more and more impregnable by the minute. I don't think I like that.
I'm sure I don't like it,
Mara retorted grimly.
Especially in potentially unfriendly hands. It'd be worse than Mount Tantus.
They reached the landing and the expected switchback and continued on up. For a while, Mara tried to keep track of the stair count, but somewhere in the mid-200s, she gave up the exercise as useless. They had passed the 4th landing when she began to detect the alien presence. She kept at the sensation for the next few minutes until she was sure. Then, as they started around the 5th landing, she leaned over and caught Luke's eye.
Luke,
she murmured.
Company.
I know, he murmured back. I've been picking them up for a while now. We must be getting close to the inhabited parts of the High Tower.
The sensations seem at all familiar to you?
Very, he assured her. They're the same species as the pilots who tried to shoot me down on my way in.
I've never gotten that close to any of this particular group,
Mara said, a sudden shiver running through her.
But I've definitely felt this sense before.
Luke seemed to brace himself.
Thrawn?
She nodded.
Thrawn.
For a long moment they stood there in silence.
Well, you called it,
Mara reminded him.
You said that it might be a group of his people in there.
It's starting to look that way,
Luke said, looking up and waving toward him.
Splinter of stones.
There was a rustling of wings, and the Kwamja fluttered to a landing on one of the stairs ahead of Luke.
You said there were places where you could see or hear into the High Tower, Luke said. How close are we to the nearest of those?
Splinter of stones began to speak. Suddenly, tired of this second-class status of hers, Mara reached over and took Luke's hand.
Not too far away.
She heard the Kwamja's voice echoed through Luke's mind.
2 and a portion more turns.
A portion?
Mara asked, frowning.
The spot must be part way up one of the stairways, Luke said, glancing at the cylinders running alongside them. At least these power lines should help mask our life form readings if anyone's looking.
That's convenient. It also means R2 won't be able to pick up much of anything either,
Mara pointed out.
Not so convenient.
But that will surely not be a problem for you.
Child of Wind spoke up.
You have the Force.
True, Luke agreed.
Some of us more than others, of course,
Mara added, suppressing a grimace. As he had on that trek across Wayland 10 years ago, Luke had been giving her more or less non-stop Jedi instruction during the trip through these caverns. But despite those efforts, she was apparently no closer to hearing this weird, force-driven communication of the Kwamja and Kwamquay than she'd been when she first arrived on the planet. And it was starting to bug her. It was starting to really bug her. What did she have to do to break through this invisible barrier to full Jedi powers anyway? She didn't have an answer. Luke might, but she didn't.
and there was no way in the galaxy she was going to ask him. Not any time soon, anyway. Disgustedly, she let go of his hand.
Well, come on,
she growled.
If we're going to do this, let's do it.
Right, Luke said. If he'd picked up on her sudden sour mood, he didn't comment on it.
Okay, Splitter of Stones, let's go. And warn your people to be especially quiet from this point on.
They resumed their climb. Mara followed along behind Luke, putting one foot in front of the other, strictly on autopilot. Her full attention turned outward as she stretched out to the alien presences growing steadily closer. None seemed to be very close, but from past experience, she knew that with unfamiliar alien minds, apparent distances could be misleading. Two and a third flights of stairs later, as promised, they reached Splitter of Stone's observation post.
That's an exit, all right,
Mara muttered, peering into the alcove that opened off to the side of the stairway. Roughly 3 meters wide and one deep, it ended in a door-shaped panel made of black stone, equipped with a locking wheel and a pair of hand grip releases. In the center of the panel was a tiny hole, through which an equally tiny ray of reddish light shone through.
Looks like it swings outward. Yes,
Luke murmured back, stepping into the alcove for a closer look.
Interesting, this locking wheel. Why lock it from this side? Maybe it was for the exclusive use of certain high-ranking parties who wanted everyone else kept out,
Mara said, stretching out with the force. The alien presence was still pervasive, but still muted.
If you want to give it a try, this is probably as good a time as any. Right.
For a moment, Luke held his face against the door, peering through the peephole. Then, gripping the wheel, he turned it to the left.
Mara winced in anticipation, but the screech of rusted metal she'd expected didn't happen.
In fact, the muted sound struck her as more like pieces of polished stone sliding smoothly against each other. Luke finished turning the wheel, then took hold of the two grip releases.
Here we go,
he muttered, and squeezed. Whoever had designed the self-lubrication for the locking wheel had apparently also designed the hinges. Again, with only the faint rumble of stone against stone, the door swung open. Mara was through the opening before the door had finished its swing, blaster in hand, her senses stretched fully alert. They were at the end of a fairly wide corridor, she saw, that stretched for perhaps 20 meters before opening into an open atrium-like area with a wide central pillar running vertically through it from which pale reddish light was streaming. Spaced along each side of the corridor were 5 recessed doors, each flanked by 2 of the wall sconces that they'd seen in the underground room below. Unlike those, though, the upper sections of these sconces were glowing with a muted white light, the illumination adding to the dimmer red coming from the pillar in the atrium. The corridor's floor and ceiling were covered in an intricate pattern of tiny interlocked tiles, while the walls were a contrasting plain silvery metal. From the entryway behind her came a soft twitter.
R2 says the red light is the same spectrum as the sun,
Luke said from her side.
Either we're near the top, or they're piping the light down here. I'd guess the latter,
Mara said.
The decor's a surprise. The Hajarna fortress is nothing but plain black stone. Feel like a little reconnoiter?
Sure, Luke said.
Splitter of Stones, if you or the others know anything about the High Tower you haven't told us, this is the time to do it.
There were more of the Kwamja chirps and almost speech, and abruptly all 8 of them flapped past Mara and headed down the corridor. Reaching the end, they split up and vanished off in different directions.
He said they don't know anything more,
Luke told Mara,
but that they're eager to learn. As long as they don't bring the locals down on us,
Mara said, flicking off her glow rod and sliding it away into a pocket.
You'd probably better leave the droid here.
I was planning to,
Luke said.
R2, get back in the alcove out of sight and close the door. Child of Winds, no. You stay here with R2.
There was an obvious complaint from the young Quam Quay.
Not now, Luke said firmly. Later, maybe, but not now. Come on, Mara.
They headed out along the corridor, Child of Wind still fussing behind them.
Looks like a residential area,
Luke commented, nodding toward the doors they were passing.
Yes,
Mara said, frowning at the central pillar they were approaching. As they neared it, she could see that it was shaped like a giant circular stairway, except with a smooth ramp instead of a staircase spiraling around it. And the edge...
Is that ramp moving?
It does look like it, Luke said, craning his neck.
Like a spiral slideway going up.
They reached the end of the corridor, and Mara eased an eye around the corner. More corridors like the one they were in were visible, spreading out like sunburst rays centered on the open area around the spiral slideway.
Definitely a barracks section, she said. I wonder where the down ramp is.
It's on the inside half of the up ramp, Luke said, pointing.
See? That inner section is going down? I see it,
Mara nodded.
Must be tricky getting across the up ramp when you want to get off.
We'll probably get a chance to try it, Luke said, stepping close to Mara and putting his arm around her shoulder. She frowned at him, opened her mouth to ask what he was doing.